Hey, this is the R-O-X-A-N-N-E, and you are listening to CKUT.
Impossible schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way.
Good evening. This is Lisna Kasharo. I am a member of Older Women Live Collective, CKUT 90.3 FM. We produce a radio program every second Wednesday of each month. Greetings to our sisters, Rosemary Wally, Laura Yaros, and Marlene Rateau, who were not able to participate tonight. In the context of colonization and the rise of capitalism, shocking stories have emerged. Tonight, we'll talk about some of them. The first is about the Mohawk mother's struggle, demanding the use of appropriate methods in a search for unmarked graves at the former Royal Victoria Hospital site. Next, we'll talk about Lana Ponting, Morningstar, and Gail Kastner, three victims at the McGill University's Allan Memorial Institute. During the 1950s, the CIA and the Canadian government funded psychiatrist Dr. Ewen Cameron to carry out human experiments and torture people in Canada at McGill University, Allan Memorial Institute. These experiments were the basis for methods of torture later applied in various countries. The objective of these methods was to extract information from resistance sources. Guatemala is one example in which, in the context of the Cold War, the United States, Canada, and other countries supported Guatemalan military dictatorships from 1954 onwards. In Guatemala, the objective of the repressive forces was to forcibly disappear, torture, and eliminate courageous people who were opposing the system of exploitation and exclusion. Torture methods developed at the Allan Memorial Institute were applied in Guatemala. Even today in Guatemala, we are still fighting for memory and justice for the victims of torture and other war crimes. We fight for democracy. Last, we'll have an update on the situation in Guatemala in terms of the elections that resulted in 60% of the voters choosing a party not involved in any of the crimes against humanity and corruption that has been the norm for almost 70 years, and a message from the new Guatemalan vice president. So welcome, Marge, for being here with us tonight to talk about the Mohawk Mother's Struggle. Marge is part of a group supporting the Canistensera Sings in a racist act. They were illegitimately kicked off the site in late July. She has been directly witnessing McGill and Société des Infrastructures du Québec, SQI, actions regarding this struggle. So thank you, Marge, and let's start. The Mohawk Mothers is a group that helps Indigenous women accomplish their traditional cultural duty as caretakers of the land to protect all life, including their children and ancestors. They are committed to gathering information about medical experimentation on human subjects performed in the 1950s and 1960s at the Allan Memorial Institute on McGill University campus, including the infamous CIA-funded brainwashing project, MK Ultra. What do you know about Indigenous people being subjected to experiments at the Institute?
Okay, so let me just say first that, yes, as you said, I'm part of a group who supports the Mohawk mothers. And today I'm going to obviously be speaking from my own perspective, right? I don't want to the audience to think that I don't want to engage the Ganis Tensera with what I'm saying. Of course, my perspective is pretty well informed, because as you said, I've been very active on site and witnessing like all that, well, not all, but everything. Lots of things that have been happening there, but just to make things clear. Okay, so what I know of Indigenous people being subjected to medical experiments at the Allen Memorial Institute, well, obviously, it's not only Indigenous children that were taken there, there are still quite a few survivors of the victims of the Allen and the MKUltra project. I know you're going to welcome one, but one that was very, very important in the Ganis Tensera struggles and legal procedures is a lady called Lana Ponting. So her testimonies are all accessible. They've made they're public, so they can be consulted on the Ganis Tensera, the mohawkmothers.ca website. So of course I've learned a lot with her testimonies, and also Gahandineda, which is one of the Mohawk mothers. In her affidavit in the court papers, talks about some Indigenous children who were taken there. So what I know about that is that often it's we're talking about an Indigenous youth who were taken to the Allen, and like it's close to kidnapping, right? Like it's they were told, they were like labeled unruly or juvenile delinquents. But to the eyes of the community, it wasn't the case at all. Like Gahantineta has a very specific example in her affidavit. And she said it was a good student and a great athlete. Someone she knows in Ganawage was taken at the Allen. And he was actually lobotomized by Dr. Cameron. Okay, at the Allen. And when he came back, of course, in a very, very, very diminished state, to say the least. So, and we also know that the residential schools kidnapping Indigenous children was also a way of turning those Indigenous children into guinea pigs for medical experiments. So again, there are lots of references in the court papers and in the testimonies of the Ganis Tensera and Lana Ponting that are available.
Okay, thank you very much for informing us on that. I am going to do a little bit of more research so I could include more about this topic in our program. And you know, actually, what you are saying about what is being done to Indigenous youth and Indigenous people is similar to what things that happen in Guatemala, and that is what brings me even closer to heart to this struggle, because it's Indigenous people in Latin America, in the whole Latin American continent, have been subjected to so many abuses. So let's.
And may I just add something? Yeah. Because I'm just it comes back to my mind that in Lana Ponting's testimonies, which again has been decisive in the injunction that Ganis Tensera could get by the Superior Court, she talks of a friend of an Indigenous teenager, and they became friends together, and she was subjected to like awful treatments, which are explained by Lana Ponting, but also she disappeared from one day to the next. She was not there anymore, and so she disappeared, and no one could tell where she was. So, and another very important thing is that Lana Ponting has very precise details of one night where she woke up at night and she saw men with shovels, men shoveling. So she obviously was like, there's missing people, missing Indigenous children or teenagers. And then I see people, men with shovels and like, so of course it seemed like they were buried, you know? And it was also like lots of people were talking about that at the Allen. So, yeah.
So do you think that actually at the Royal Victoria Hospital, there are supposedly people in common, the name is escaping my...
Unmarked graves, maybe?
Yeah, common graves, and they are put together. It's very similar. In Guatemala, there are many common graves as well, where people have been there, but actually there has been a lot of investigation there, and many bodies have been recovered, and I think that a good percentage have been identified. So I really hope that in this case also you can get to that point.
It's exactly that's what at stakes here.
Yes. Okay, so I have another question for you. The Mohawk Mothers have been engaged in a legal challenge with promoters of the new Vic project to delay excavation on the former Royal Victoria Hospital site until a proper archaeological investigation is conducted using the traditional protocols of the Kainere Kowa, meaning great peace. What is the disagreement between Mohawk Mothers and McGill University and the SQI?
Mm-hmm. So the main, the thing is that core elements, as well as the spirit of the injunction and the court mandated agreements, are continuously and increasingly violated by SQI and McGill. So just to like pinpoint some core elements of the injunction that was obtained in October 2022. It says that a forensic and archaeological investigation has to be carried out by an independent investigation team led by the Kanisten Sera and MKUltra survivors. And here I was quoting paragraph 1 of the appendix of the injunction. And it's reinforced in paragraph 16 that all parties, including McGill and SQI, agree that it should be Indigenous-led, which is the opposite that has been happening from the beginning, okay? And I'll show how later. So, and in paragraph 10 of the injunction, it also says that the plaintiffs, so the mothers, have a clear right to expect that the defendants will address and attempt to resolve their concern in a spirit of reconciliation before relying on the adversarial process to advocate their positions, okay? So, of course, truth is not, and this was the paragraph 10 of the injunction. So now, of course, truth is not mentioned here, but paragraph 12 and 13 reminds us that truth has to stand by reconciliation, okay? And this investigation is all about uncovering the truth and the awful medical experiments that McGill seems to be actively covering up. And I'll show how later. So even though their words, McGill's words, say otherwise, it's their actions that speak, and they're not in favor of truth here, okay? So now, from what I have directly witnessed on site since July 2023, it is McGill and SQI who are refusing, and so who are putting delays, because one thing we kind of, like, now they're pressing they're pressing to go on with their construction work for this huge mm-hmm. project. And we expect them to say in court that, you know, it's too long and it has to go through. But the thing is, it's actually McGill and SQI who are mostly responsible for making this very long, because the court mandated and then agreed investigation. They continuously and in multiple ways refused to follow the panels and the Afghanistan Sera claim and recommendations. Okay, so I have a few examples here. Mm-hmm. So first, after the racist assault and kick out of Mohawk monitors on site, just days after that, and McGill and SQI apologized as if it was enough. They apologized and they promised that this specific SQI agent, mm-hmm. who was guilty of racist assault, would never come back on site again. Yet she was seen recently on site. Mm-hmm. And then again, McGill and SQI just apologized. It's not enough just to apologize, you know? And so, so just after that, beginning of August, McGill and SQI disbanded the expert panel, okay? And this is a core element of the injunction and the agreement. Everything relies on the recommendations of this panel. And again, on the fact that the investigation team should be led by the Afghanistan Sera and MKUltra survivors. So another example of that is they keep on refusing to bring in a forensic team. Remember, it's in the injunction. Mm-hmm. There were archaeologists on the panel. They're not there anymore since beginning of August. And remains of children and rests of a dress have been found. Now bones have been found, air balls have been found. And yet the archaeologists are not... It's not their role, it's not their skills, and it's not their expertise to deal with that. And they've been saying it. We need a forensic team at this point to deal with those evidences. And this has been refused continuously. Another example is that McGill refused to make the ground-penetrating radar data. They refused to make it accessible to the panel, even to the panel, and also the Canadian Archaeological Association. That was a recommendation from the panel. And so from the beginning, this data has only been in the hands of McGill. And they're interested, you know, or they could just miss out on some evidences. So this is crucial in the problem and the disagreement. And they also have refused, you know, there was human remains detection dogs that came to the site, mm-hmm. and three dogs alerted on the same exact zone for the scent of human remains. So there's 0.06%, that's less than 1% probabilities of a false negative when two dogs alert at the same zone. So, and McGill is McGill is saying that, is denying this, and it's a denial of scientific evidence. It is, you know, and they refused the dogs to come back to sniff the piles of this zone that was excavated. They also refused the archaeologists to sift through, to have this pile sift through. It was only excavated with huge machinery, heavy machinery, which is, you know, like, it's not, and now they pretend that the search, the first, this stage of the archaeological investigation is over. They've been saying this to McGill community in official messages that, okay, we're going to go on with construction because the archaeological investigation is done in this zone. It's not true, you know? So, yeah, so that's another problem.
Yeah, well, yeah, actually, I think that in fact, what they are doing is everything possible for this not to work in the favor of the Mohawk mothers' struggle. So that takes me to my next question. So what, if anything, justifies McGill and SQI dishonoring the agreement? I mean, and how, I mean, how is this permitted? I mean, there is a signed agreement with every single point clearly stated. And so.
Yeah. Exactly. It's hard to believe, actually, that all of this has been happening and that this can actually go on. So, of course, the mothers and their relatives, I've done an amazing work to gather evidence of those violations. And they're going to go, they're going to be in court. Their hearing is October 27th. Okay, so of course, and I mean, it's so obvious, and the violations have been documented. So I mean, we're all looking forward for the justice to, you know, react, but there's still almost like there's still 21 days to go on until October 27th. So it's very worrying, more than worrying. It's scaring that in those 21 days, it feels like McGill could continue to mess up. So so I totally agree. Like it's quite unbelievable, but it's actually the way it works. It's that as we said, nothing can justify them. But honestly, McGill and SQI, they don't even seem to bother trying to justify. They just keep on pretending that they have been following the agreements and the panel's recommendation. Even if nothing could be further from the truth, you know? What's his name? Christopher Manfredi September 11th and 12th has sent written messages to all McGill communities and faculty members. And I'm going to quote him. He says, "I can now confirm that this stage of the work has not produced any evidence of human remains or unmarked graves. The Mohawk Mothers are immediately informed of findings and developments in the archaeological work." And there, and I end quote. So, like, they keep on pretending that they're respecting the agreements, and the main problem that I see here is that what McGill and SQI says, what they communicate, is not being questioned enough. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't bother answering the media as well, because we don't hear of them often in the media, but once you begin confronting what they're saying with what they're doing, it becomes obvious that they're actually betraying everything in the injunctions. So betraying the agreements, the Gunnison Sera, and the MKUltra survivors. This is actually a huge part of the work that our group has been doing in the past months. So we're countering the inaccuracy of McGill's communication, which is just plainly false, right? And it takes time, but it's working. Reaching out to students, associations, and collectives on campus, as well as teacher and distributing flyers on campus, keep on bringing more and more of McGill's community to understand what's happening. And they're actually, like, most of the people we're talking to, they're shocked. They're shocked to learn what's really happening. And they're shocked to see that how it's contrasting with McGill, with what McGill has been communicating. What happens is that our group is growing in number. It's growing. It takes time, but it's happening. So yeah, it's part of our huge work. And like, as one of the most recent violation of the injunction and agreement is so dire that Kimberly Murray, the independent special interlocutor for missing children, unmarked graves, and burial sites associated with Indian residential schools, stepped in and she reached out to McGill and SQI. And Murray, she urged McGill and SQI to halt immediately the construction work they have started mid-September. Again, they decided to do that unilaterally. That's it. As I quoted, it was after they started the construction work, after the quotation from Manfredi that I shared, saying, mm-hmm. "Oh, okay, it's complete now, and we're gonna go on." So, let me just see. So yeah, that's it. Not only are they stepping over the panel and the Afghanistan Sera who are supposed to lead this investigation, but they just plainly keep on hiding their findings to them, to everyone and to the mothers. Like after the works have started in the past 2 weeks, they also have been communicated, you know, don't worry, if we find anything during our work, we're going to present them to the mothers, okay? But then bones and balls of hair were found in their, in those, like 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and the mothers were not even notified, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they pretend out loud that they will carry their excavation work super carefully. And last week, again, a Mohawk monitor found accidentally the rest of another shoe, a second children's shoe. It was in the ditch. Mm. They found them. So they, it's not true that they're being careful. Okay. Like they're doing their work and like, that's it. A shoe was found accidentally, you know? Mm. So yeah, and there's more because the zone where the search dogs have alerted for human remains, now this particular zone is threatened to be to become a part of the work of the construction working zone, okay? And when the search dogs have alerted for the scent of human remains, the panel was still there. The panel was still working. And they said that they had to make a 10 meters diameter zone to be investigated around where the smells were sent. Okay. And this zone has not been investigated yet. As I said, the soil that was excavated was not sifted through, and when was then moved, they literally moved piles of soil that could contain human remains. How disrespectful is that? But there's more than that. In this 10 meter perimeters, the building, there's the wall of a building that comes in this perimeter, and the Afghanistan Sera key and the archaeologists keep on asking access, because they have to have access to this, you know, closed part of the building, mm-hmm. to find, maybe it's inside, mm-hmm. maybe it's close to the wall, maybe it's inside. And this has been refused. And recently, so it was not this week, but last week, Mohawk monitors witnessed construction workers demolishing things there. So it's super worrying, you know, like they could be destroying crucial evidence.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and when they were asked, what are you doing? What is the work that you're doing? They would not answer. Mm-hmm. So it's everything is kept secret. There's no transparency. There's no reliability. There's no honesty. So it's very, very like, so it raises the anxiety for everyone, you know?
Yes. I agree with you. So it seems that actually time is working in favor of McGill and SQI. So I have a question. Do you trust the justice system here? Do you think there is any way to move that hearing closer? Because I think as time goes by, they have more chances to be uncovering, as you said, the evidence. And then there is going to be nothing or little. And so the question is, if you trust the justice system and if there is any way to reduce that waiting time?
Well, I'm very worried of those 21 days before the court hearing. I won't lie. And I mean, obviously, the Afghanistan Sera are. Mm. But I've witnessed those things, and I know that the evidences and the documentation that the Afghanistan Sera gathered to show in court are so solid that I could not imagine. Like I'm not a legal. Like, you know, I'm not that knowledgeable in, you know, legal stuff and everything. But it just seems like common sense, you know, because like we could film lots of things on site. Okay, we could film. And I mean, there's just so many facts against Megill and SQI. So it's pretty obvious. It seems pretty obvious that the court, I cannot imagine how the court could rule otherwise than, you know, reinforce the injunction. And I don't know, what the court can do more than just, because it's already done, actually, you know? So I don't know, like, in French, we say outrage au magistrat, you know, it's an outrage, I think, what mm-hmm. Megill and SQI is doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure of the consequences, and I hope that Megill is going to, you know, like, that some accountability, and that some, like, that the court is going to ask some accountability to Megill, and to, you know, have a very, very concrete, that the consequences are going to be concrete. But the thing is, the evidences, we have to protect until then, until the court hearing, we have to protect the evidences. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've been putting on the vigils again, you know. We first been vigiling the site when the Ganistanceta were kicked out of the site. They had 3 weeks during which they did not feel safe to go back there. And everything was not going, like, they had other claims, but basically they didn't feel safe. Mm. And we can understand, you know? So then they reached a new agreement with Megill and SQI, but then the panel was still disbanded, you know, like the Mohawk mothers have shown, you know, like it was important for them and it's still important for them to do this work and to have the investigation advancing. But they've been going back, even if the panel have been disbanded, even if the injunction was not respected. So I would say that their good faith has been pretty clear, you know. So anyway, in those 3 weeks, we were checking the site, you know, because the mothers were not there. And we mostly live in Montreal, closer to the site. So we were going there and like video documenting things that would seem to mess up with the site and potential evidences. And then when the Ganistanceta came back and the investigation went on, we stopped those vigils. But now, with what's happening and the constant threat of excavation on critical zones and things like that, we've been, you know, we've called to action people, more and more people, to come and to support the surveillance, you know. And we did this with an hashtag saying hashtag all eyes on Megill, you know. And so we're kind of, you know, trying to make what we can. It's not enough, because of course following the law and the injunction would be the good thing to do, but since it's not done, that's it. And I mean, there until recently, at least, like Mohawk monitors and the Ganistanceta are still going, although they are not respected, you know. Yeah. Everything they do, everything they say is not being respected by Megill and SQI. So, yeah.
Yeah, I am with you. I agree with you. So you mentioned the vigils. Could you inform our listeners when are they taking place, what time, which days, and where?
Okay.
If they want to join you, and also if there is anything else that people could do to support you?
Of course. So the vigils take place from, well, the working hours on site where there might be construction workers is roughly from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. So in those times, we try to have as much people as possible. And if anybody isn't, and it's on the former Royal Vic Hospital near the Allen Institute. So it's on Avenue des Pins at the corner of Dr. Penfield. Okay. And, but if someone like, and you are all invited to jump in, because we do need as many eyes as possible. And if anyone is interested, I would invite them to either follow the Instagram account of our solidarity group, which is @ Take Back Tegananndaq. Which is not, I think, could we put the link in the on the webpage?
Yes, please. Yeah.
And also there's an email address to reach out to us, which is ds.mohawkmothers@gmail.com. So, and there's really a huge spectrum of actions that people can take, from just tying orange and purple ribbons on the fences in front of the Royal Vic to show the mothers some love and to tell McGill that Truth and Reconciliation, which they signed up for, you know, they officially, the university officially signed up for Truth and Reconciliation, yet see how they act, you know, like it's very problematic. And they keep on ripping our ribbons off, which is violent in itself. They let the ribbons there until Truth and Reconciliation Day, okay, which was September 30th. Next Monday, they started ripping them off.
Yeah, it's strategic.
So yeah, so those are the spectrum is super, super wide, from just small actions that do not ask for much time and involvement, to, you know, people who could help us organize march and gatherings, or help us with social media or communication. There's many, many ways to help. So please reach out and to donate as well. If people don't have time, there's also fundraisers to directly to the Mohawk Mothers. And there's also one for Lana Ponding, because she's living into very hard living conditions.
Okay. So could you send me, links and stuff? I am going to request Magilsek CKUT 90.3 FM to put it on their site. If people can go look at there and then reach you, and also the documents that you
absolutely
maybe on there.
Absolutely, I'm gonna send you all the links, and just an easy reference as well for people who would like to know more is the website. It's at ours, like it's very the Ganesenseras website. So direct information, it's mohawkmothers.ca. So mohawkmothersalltogether.ca. People can go find lots of information there. Okay. So yes, I'm going to share the links with pleasure.
Thank you so much. For All That Women Live, OWL CKUT 90.3 FM, it is important to inform the McGill community and other listeners about Mohawk Mothers' struggle and generate awareness and solidarity for such an important struggle. Thank you, Marge, for giving us your time and sharing with us your knowledge about this topic. Next, we have Odemin QE Singers. They are a group of female drummers and singers interpreting the Mohawk love song. We choose this because the Mohawk gives love and they deserve love in return. Right after that, I'll have a Stephanie that will talk about Gail Kastner in the context of human experiments that took place at McGill University Alan Memorial Institute. And I certainly am going to include more of the information that Marge here was so kind to share with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Give us a love song at the hop, hey, hey, me tie, 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 tie.
For a shawny, yongi a wheat a hay, yongi a wheat a hay, yongi a wheat a hay, me tie, 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 tie. Shawnee, yongi a wheat a
Looking for Mentors, we're dedicated to empowering your children to reach for the stars despite life's challenges. Well, look no further. Located at NDG, Rise Up is a free after-school program located at the Rehoboth Church of God, 4874 Grand Boulevard in Montreal. The program runs every Tuesday from 3 to 6 p.m., and our team is presently welcoming enrollment of children between the ages of 6 and 16. Rise Up strives to enrich the educational, emotional, and spiritual development of the youths within our community. Please contact our Executive Director, Nicole Mitchell, at rcog-educationministry@outlook.com or at 438-931-5292. We need to see all of our children rise up.
Three victims. Here are some segments of Lana Ponting's declaration. I was a typical rebellious teenager with a new stepmother. One day when I had run away from home, I got picked up by the police in downtown. They phoned my parents and they brought me home. The next thing I knew, I was in the Allan Memorial Institute in April 1958. Dr. Cameron assured my parents that he would take care of me. He took me to a room. The nurse came and put a needle in my arm. After that, I could not get up. My balance was affected by this medication. I saw other people walking like zombies in the hallway. I wondered if I was like them. The nurse came into my room, put a tape in a recorder, and she gave me another shot. That tape kept playing, "You're a bad girl," over and over. I could not get up. I don't know how long I was in this state. And then it played, "You're a good girl." I was given a lot of LSD and other drugs. Some of the children I saw there were indigenous between 5 to 19 years old. I became friends with Morningstar, an indigenous girl. She spoke English and was beautiful. She had a long black braid that went down her back. We would talk about teenage things, music, and that stuff. She would go in and out. First, she could remember things. She would talk about her two sisters and one brother, and that she came from far away. The next thing you know, she couldn't remember things. It made me sad to see her like this. I was 16 and she was 17. Morningstar was given shock treatments. She told me that her head hurt. They put something on my head and my body shook. She said and cried sadly at this point. I just wonder to this day, how many other indigenous people did Cameron do this to, and what did he do to them? Now, I don't know whatever happened to Morningstar. I wish I knew. She just disappeared. To me, Dr. Cameron is a murderer. He gave everybody the most horrendous shots of LSD. I would sneak out of my room at night, walk down the front steps and hide. I found people standing. Two were on one side of the wall and one was on the other side. I remember that vividly. They had red handles on the shovels and a flashlight. Were they burying something in the ground? There were rumors that there are bodies buried in the Allan property. And I believe that some of them could be indigenous people. We now welcome Stephanie to talk to Older Women Live, OWLCKUT 90.3 FM listeners about Gail Kastner, another victim at the Allan Memorial Institute. Stephanie is a member of Plataforma Canada of Guatemalans in Exile and participates in production of audio and visual materials and diffusion of alternative news. Stephanie, who is Gail Kastner?
Gail Kastner was subject to having the frontal lobes of her brain penetrated by 150 to 200 volts of electricity six times while her body convulsed violently on a lab table, causing her fractures, sprains, bloody lips, broken teeth, and much damage. She is one of the survivors of an experiment designed to erase people's memory and rewrite their history to easily subjugate them. After her traumatic experience, she avoids falling asleep because she is afraid that she will get what she calls her electric dreams. In these dreams, she sees the long-dead psychiatrist Dr. Irwin Cameron, who administrated the shocks that Gail received, as well as other forms of torture she was victim of many years ago.
How did these traumatic experiences affect her?
As a result of these electric shocks and traumatic experiences, she eats poorly, she's a chain smoker, and has a great difficulty remembering anything that happened to her before she was 20. Gail's twin sister tells her that when they were adults, she was difficult and impossible to take care of. She talked like a baby, urinated on the floor, and demanded to have her nephew's bottle. However, Gail's do not have any memory of that. When she was in her 40s, she met Jacob and began a relationship. He was a survivor of the Holocaust and had an interest in memory loss. He thought that Gail's loss of memory was caused by something.
Did Gail and Jacob do anything about Gail's memory loss?
In 1992, Gail and Jacob saw a newspaper with a sensational headline, "Brainwashing Experiments." As they saw the list of symptoms, baby talk, memory loss, they got the paper and read the whole article and began her search to know what was done to her at the McGill University's Allen Memorial Institute. After 2 decades of searching carried out by some of the victims and the hard work of American civil lawyer Joseph Rao, the truth about Cameron's experiments was uncovered. 77 of the victims obtained compensation.
Thank you, Stephanie, for participating with us tonight. Our next song by Guatemalan composer Sara Curuchich and Mexican singer Lila Downs is called Pueblos, Peoples. This song talks about the struggles of indigenous people of the world.
Sembrando los pueblos con la esperanza en el aliento.
In the context of the Cold War, with the excuse of fighting communism, the United States, Canada, and other countries supported Guatemalan military dictatorships from 1954 onwards. Forced disappearances were carried out by the army. The practices of torture to obtain information and destroy people opposing the system of exploitation were based on the CIA-funded project at Allen Memorial Institute. The problems in Guatemala, however, started long before the U.S.-backed military coup in 1954 that ousted our only truly democratic governments of Juan José Arevalo and Jacobo Arbenz from 1944-1954. These problems began with the onset of European imperialism affecting the whole Latin American continent. After 69 years of military-backed corrupt, exploitative, and criminal governments, Bernardo Arevalo, son of President Juan José Arevalo, and Karin Herrera, both from Semilla Party, were elected president and vice president on August the 20th with over 60% of the vote. With the election of Semilla Party, people see a little opening that could begin a process of ending systematic exploitation, repression, corruption, and impunity, and building a democratic country, one governed by the rule of law and justice. However, this situation is complicated, and we must talk about the actions that the corrupt and criminal elites are taking to prevent Arevalo and Herrera from even taking office on January 14, 2024. Current Attorney General Consuelo Porras has been criminalizing judges, prosecutors, and lawyers, journalists, and political opponents, social leaders, and human rights defenders, abusively using state institutions and biased spurious criminal prosecutions. The public ministry and some co-opted judges have released from jail people who were found guilty of being members of organized crime rings and committing war crimes. Guatemala's corrupt elites in control of the legal and political systems are trying to criminalize and ultimately to overturn the results of the Guatemalan elections. Public Ministry Prosecutor Rafael Curruchichi is trying to enforce an illegal resolution of Judge Freddy Orellana to suspend the Semilla Party. With many police officers, Curruchichi invaded the Supreme Electoral Tribunal office and took by force all the documentation related to the election. Coup d'etat. These aggressive attacks against the Semilla Party and the electoral process, and there have been more, show the corrupt elite's intention to consummate a technical coup d'etat against Arevalo and Herrera. As a reaction, people began peaceful demonstrations in Guatemala. Day by day, the number of demonstrators has increased, and yet Consuelo Porras and Curruchichi continue operating under impunity at the service of the criminal elites in power. As a response, 48 indigenous towns called people to participate in a general strike starting last Monday of October the 2nd. Indigenous, peasants, youth, students, and women's organizations and individuals continue joining the general strike and blocking highways until the Attorney General Consuelo Porras, Prosecutor Rafael Curruchichi, and Judge Freddy Orellana resign. The corrupt human rights attorney Alejandro Cordova asked the demonstrators to participate in a dialogue to look for a solution. The answer was that dialogue will begin once Consuelo Porras, Rafael Curruchichi, and Freddy Orellana resign. Guatemalans within and outside our country are working to continue this battle for a new Guatemala with justice, peace, and democracy. Victims, relatives, and Guatemalan people are without fear struggling for justice, democracy, and peace. Next is an extract of the new elected Guatemalan Vice President Karin Herrera's message.
A las organizaciones de la sociedad civil.
The civil society organizations that continuously work to guarantee respect for the rights of all. You are guardians of our democracy and the beacon of hope in dark times. To the Guatemalans who put in the common good first, have relegated personal commitments, and have come out to defend what rightfully belongs to us all, the future of this country. To Guatemalans and international community who have demonstrated the essence of solidarity and fraternity towards each of the demonstrators, thank you.
Hacia cada uno de los manifestantes, gracias.
This program would not have been possible without the participation of Marge, Stephanie, the Odemin QE singers, Sara Curuchich, Lila Downs, Guatemalan Vice President Karin Herrera, Vivar Quintana, our tech expert Joe Gibson King, and especially you. Our last song, Without Fear, is by Mexican singer Vivar Quintana. Thank you and stay tuned.
Oh. estado, los cielos, las calles, que tiemblen los jueces y los judiciales. Hoy a las mujeres nos quitan la calma, nos sembraron miedo, nos crecieron alas. A cada minuto de cada semana nos roban amigas, nos matan hermanas, destrozan sus cuerpos, los desaparecen. No olvides sus nombres, por favor, señor presidente. Por todas las compas luchando en Reforma, por todas las morras peleando en Sonora, por las comandantas luchando por Chiapas, por todas las madres buscando en Tijuana.
Cantamos sin miedo, pedimos justicia, gritamos por cada desaparecida.
Que resuene fuerte,
nos queremos vivas,
que caiga con fuerza
el feminicida.
Yo todo lo incendio, yo todo lo rompo. Si un día algún fulano te apaga los ojos, ya nada me calla, ya todo me sobra. Si tocan a una, respondemos todas. Soy Claudia, soy Esther y soy Teresa. Soy Ingrid, soy Fabiola, soy Valeria.
Soy la niña que subiste por la fuerza.
Soy la madre que ahora llora por sus muertas.
Y soy esta que te hará pagar las cuentas.
Justicia, justicia, justicia.
Por todas las compas marchando en Reforma, por todas las morras peleando en Sonora, por las comandantas luchando por Chiapas, por todas las madres luchando en Tijuana.
Cantamos sin miedo, pedimos justicia, gritamos por cada desaparecida.
Que resuene fuerte,
nos queremos vivas,
que caiga con fuerza
el feminicida.
Que caiga con fuerza
el feminicida.
Y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del amor. Y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del amor.
It's Tony from Planet Giza, and you're listening to CKUT Montreal Community Radio. This the crib right here, so shout outs to every station on here, and shout outs to you, the listener. Don't go nowhere, we'll be right back.
Parents, have you been looking for mentors who are dedicated to empowering your children to reach for the stars despite life's challenges? Well, look no further. Located at NDG, Rise Up is a free after-school program located at the Rehoboth Church of God, 4874 Grand Boulevard in Montreal. The program runs every Tuesday from 3 to 6 p.m. and our team is presently welcoming enrollment of children between the ages of 6 and 16. Rise Up strives to enrich the educational, emotional, and spiritual development of the youths within our community. Please contact our Executive Director, Nicole Mitchell, at rcog-educationministry@outlook.com or at 438-931-5292. We need to see all of our children rise up.
Bienvenue à Mandla Radio, ici à CKUT 90,3 FM à Montréal. Ce soir, nous vous présentons les épisodes 3 et 4 de la série de podcasts Omer Blandin Diop, plutôt le mort que l'esclavage, produit par Clémentine Métainier et Florence Maurice et produit par RFI. Omer Blandin Diop était un intellectuel véritablement révolutionnaire. Il s'est vigoureusement opposé au régime néocolonial de Léopold Senghor qui a remplacé le colonialisme français au Sénégal et qui a payé le prix ultime avec sa vie. Pourtant, son souvenir est presque perdu dans la mémoire collective de ce pays. Nous vous présentons le troisième épisode, le point de non-retour de la série de podcast Homer Blandin, Diop, plutôt le mot que l'esclavage.
Mars 1971. Omar se réveille sous une tente, les doigts et les pieds engourdis. L'hiver a été rude. La voix de la diva libanaise Fairouz l'accompagne dans la fin de sa nuit. Il vient de traverser l'Europe pour rejoindre ce camp d'entraînement militaire palestinien à Beit Naïm, à une vingtaine de kilomètres de Damas.
Les journées se passaient comme ça, réveil,